You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello, and welcome back to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am the Sly One, Jordan Fox, and with me, as always, is the man, Floyd Johnson Jr. Floyd, what's happening, my man?
Man, so yesterday, I'm doing good this morning, but yesterday, college football, there's certain few days that mean a lot to me in sports. One of those is National Signing Day. It's usually the first Wednesday in February. Well, starting last year, the College Football instituted an early signing day. So they basically split National Signing Day into 2 days. And yesterday was early signing day. And let me tell you, I'm not a recruiting junkie, but I am a college football junkie. And I really, really, I used to take off for National Signing Day every year, and I'd sit at home and watch the people announce and, you know, speculate about the next season. So yesterday I had a really, really hard time sleeping during the day.
I was like
every hour and a half checking my phone, seeing if we got any more commits. We got 14 commitments yesterday, 10 on defense, 4 on offense.
Now, is that a normal national signing day for a big school like Florida State?
With it being split, it has changed the way we think.
Okay.
Because some schools like to get it all done. Because, you know, most you can sign, unless you have some kind of weird gray shirts or whatever, is 25, right?
Right.
So, like yesterday, Oregon signed 22. They're damn near done. You know, they're going to try to either go after some big fish or solidify some people and get to 25. I think OU was like at 18 or 19. Florida State's at 14. That's a good number. Thing you don't want to be at, you probably don't want to be at the single digits. So it's so early signing day. The early signing day period is 3 days. Today's day 2, tomorrow's day 3. And then then they have to wait until February to sign. And I like my class so far, but pretty much everyone likes their class on National Signing Day. Because every player that you recruited is going to come in, they're going to show up to every workout, never miss class, they're going to get super bulky and big and be the greatest player in the college history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that's why I love National Signing Day and Early Signing Day. It's a day of hope.
Everybody looks good. Everybody's happy on National Signing Day, huh?
Yeah, and then the first game of the season, like, and they're like, this guy's a bum. He can't move. He can't block. Whatever. But you know what? We still, as long as I haven't seen you play, in my mind, you're the greatest player ever.
I got you.
Yeah. So now just starting off with a little football. I mean, OU did really good. They have, on Rivals, they are the number 5 recruiting class. Jordan's an OU fan, so.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm a Florida State fan. My team is number 14 in recruiting, so, which is not bad because we were 5-7 this year, which is generally going to affect recruiting pretty
much. Wow, I did not realize y'all were 5-7 this year.
Yeah, so it generally has. The fact that we had a 5-7 year and we still have a better recruiting class than Florida, who was 9-3, that bodes well for us and our ability to recruit.
Right, right. Man, it just doesn't seem that y'all should be 5-7. Y'all are only a few years removed from a Heisman-winning quarterback, that went 2 years, or well, went one game shy of 2 years of not losing a game and a national championship, right?
Two calendar years without a loss. I went from November 2012 to January 2014 without a loss.
Right, right. And in that time, you won a national championship and a Heisman win, right?
Yep. And our team made it to the inaugural playoffs. Florida State was in the inaugural playoffs.
Right. Lost to Oregon or lost to Alabama?
We lost to Oregon.
And then Alabama ended up winning that national championship, or was that Ohio State's year?
Ohio State's year.
With their third quarterback of the year. That was a powerhouse for a few years with Urban Meyer.
Yeah, but they had this guy named Ezekiel Elliott, and he's turned out pretty good at football.
I figure in the next year or two, he's going to get a big contract, a big extension like Todd Gurley got.
Let me tell you.
Did you see DeMarco Murray? You know, he's a NFL analyst for Fox right now, and I think he is looking at taking the running back job, the running back coach's job at, was it Arizona? Did you see that?
I saw it. I don't know what school.
I think it was Arizona. I need to check that to be sure, but I want to say that it was Arizona. I always figure that players like that, especially someone like DeMarco that didn't win a national championship and did not win a Super Bowl, he would want to get into coaching for an opportunity to win a ring, whether it be a national championship ring or a Super Bowl. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you were very right. It was Arizona.
Okay, cool.
Let me tell you, just one more interesting thing.
Let's hear it.
As a fan of football, I don't believe in paying running backs big contracts.
So you don't believe in paying them at all? Like no big money contracts?
I don't believe in paying them like the long, like what Todd Gurley got or what Le'Veon Bell got. I wouldn't even think about paying them. Running backs generally are a dime a dozen. You don't need an elite running back to get to the NFL, get to the Super Bowl, and they generally, like, let's say you sign them to a five-year deal, they generally have 3 good years, and then you have 2 years where you're paying them a crap ton of money, hoping that they play like they did 3 years ago.
I don't know, man. You see what happened when you have a really good running back replace an elite running back, and you've got an elite quarterback that's got 2 Super Bowl wins up in Pittsburgh, and their play has significantly dropped off since losing Le'Veon Bell.
Name Philadelphia's running back.
Last year, LeGarrette Blount was on the team.
He was on the team, but he was like one of three people. And was he? Is do you consider LeGarrette Blount an elite running back?
I mean, he has won 2 Super Bowl rings.
He made, and I just pulled up the number, he made $4.3 million last year.
Mm-hmm.
I would pay somebody $4.3 million. I'm not paying anybody 13.
Is that what, is Todd Gurley making 13?
Todd Gurley is probably closer to 16, and that's what Le'Veon Bell wants, is 17.
But is that guaranteed money? Because football contracts are a little weird. Like, they guarantee, like, you know, you got to look at the guaranteed money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, his guaranteed money, I think he got like $60 million up front.
Gurley did?
$60 million deal that had $45 million in guarantees.
For 6 years?
4 years.
For 4 years?
$15 million a year? No, not playing a running back for $15 million a year. Nope, trade him.
I don't know, man. You got to have a running back when you know what I mean? Like if you have an elite running back that opens up the pass game for you. You look at Ezekiel Elliott. I watched, you know, they got shut out the other day, and I was setting up the ring for Heroes of Wrestling, so I watched the first or second drive that the Cowboys ran, and they marched down the field. They end up not scoring, obviously, because they were shut out. But when you have a non-elite quarterback like Ezekiel or like Dak Prescott, you really see how much a quarterback means to your team. Because I watched an 11-play drive, 9 plays were running plays from Ezekiel Elliott. 1 play was a screen to Ezekiel Elliott, and the 11th play was a incomplete pass to Cole Beasley. That's how much they rely on Ezekiel Elliott.
That being said, Dallas is not going to win a Super Bowl because they rely too much on their running back.
But, I mean...
And teams that rely that much on their running back don't win Super Bowls. I literally have stats and teams to point out my... They just don't.
I don't know, man. You got to have an elite running back to get there.
No! Kansas City lost Kareem Hunt, and we haven't even noticed the difference.
Yeah, but y'all haven't won a Super Bowl yet.
No, but I'm just saying, like, teams like Philadelphia that have multiple ones, New England never keeps a running back. Literally, LeGarrette Blount went from New England to Philadelphia, and they both got to the Super Bowl. You know?
Well, but, just, I mean, New England's a different breed, though. They have the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah. I'm just saying, it's just one of those things. It's a position that it's nice, they're cool, they sell tickets, but they're a dime a dozen.
I find it hard to believe that Ezekiel Elliott and Todd Gurley are considered a dime a dozen player.
No, they're great players, but you can find two people that can do the same thing and get you the same production out of two people that you're paying considerably less money.
Yeah. I don't know. I would have to look at some stats on that.
I feel you. I just like, no. The running backs don't last long enough. I'll pay a quarterback pretty much whatever a quarterback wants. You know what? If you're a shutdown cornerback, you can get some money from me. Because, you know, we're in a passing league, so that's great. But, yeah, running backs, I'll figure it out.
I don't know, man. You look at the Rams. I think the stat that they showed last week when they were on, I can't remember if it was Sunday Night Football or what, but like 64% of their plays go through Todd Gurley, or was it 66? But anyway, basically 2/3 of all plays, offensive plays that the Los Angeles Rams play, go through Todd Gurley. So I mean that man deserves some money. You know what I mean?
He deserves it, and I imagine someone would pay him, but if I was the GM pulling that trigger, I'm trading him.
How many Super Bowl wins you got?
Huh?
I'm just really...
I'm at like 20-something. I won Super Bowl like a lot on Madden. I never pay my running backs.
Hey, is that something that you can do on Madden? Can you be like a GM and do contracts and stuff?
That's my favorite thing. It's called owner mode.
Dude, see, that shows how out of touch I am with video games. But that's the next game that I'm getting my son for his Xbox is Madden. And I want to play the GM mode. You know what I mean?
Yes. And that with me, like someone like me, I prefer the team building to any part of the game, so I tend to team build and simulate the games because I want to build up the best team I can to where my team wins simulating. But because if I play it, I'm pretty good, I would always win, and that would be boring.
Right, I got you. Well, dude, let's talk about the first family of wrestling, man. We're going to talk about some Raw and some SmackDown today, but I just took notes on the highlights of the two shows. I sent it to you this morning to see, you know, what you wanted to talk about, what you didn't want to talk about, and this is kind of what we agreed on. Instead of talking about every detail of the show, I just wanted to talk. I wanted to pick your brain to see what you thought about pretty much the McMahons, the McMahon-Helmsley, I guess, team, family, I don't know, authority, them coming back and getting, finding out if you think this is going to be a ratings grab or if this was a one-time thing or what. Because I seen on social media that ratings did get a boost with Vince McMahon coming back on Raw and SmackDown. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was the beginning of Raw, which was just a few days ago. And this was the write-up right here about the opening segment that 411 Mania put up, and I want to read it to you, and I'm going to pick your brain, see what you think about it. So it said, Vince is back. As expected, no matter how bad the shows have been, Vince gets a huge reaction, and the fans bow to him. Vince says Raw has been on the air for over 25 years and have changed with the times, and despite his intelligence, creativity, and brilliance, he can't do it all by himself anymore. He brings out Stephanie, Triple H, and Shane. Stephanie admits that they haven't been doing a great job or listening to the audience. They are here for a fresh start, and the four of them will be taking back Monday Night Raw and SmackDown. They will give the fans what they want, something new and fresh, and there will be new faces, stars, and matches. The fans are now the authority, and as long as they work together, WWE will always be then, now, and forever. Baron Corbin arrives and says he is excited for a fresh start. He kisses their asses, but says that what happened at last night's WWE TLC pay-per-view was not fair to him, and he wants to have a conversation. They boo Corbin out of the building as the McMahons keep egging on the crowd. Corbin says he did his best, and the superstars let him down. He wasn't prepared for the unfair attack at the pay-per-view. Triple H mocks Corbin for being predictable. Corbin still wants to be GM, the McMahon's huddle, and that's a negatory, Ghost Rider. Sorry, I got a little Top Gun quote in there. I didn't realize what it was trying to do. Vince says there may be a way if Corbin wins his match right now, and he can become the new GM. You almost have to admire the way they deflected all blame onto the people they let run the show and took no blame so they could come off as the heroes. The Corbin stuff got good heat, but it was pretty much what I expected. McMahon's appearing for the artificial ratings pop and empty promises in a 20-minute opening segment. So, and I kind of agree with what they say on the end, and I want to get your take on that. What they're saying is these are the four people that's been running the show all along. And then they come out, they give a quick, we haven't been listening to y'all. And then they quickly bring Baron Corbin out, and they deflect blame onto him. And then they say they're going to start listening to the fans. So do you think this is real? Do you just think this is for a show? Do you think things are going to change? What is your view of this overall McMahon's grabbing the power back and giving it to the people?
I think this is going to change.
Okay.
I think USA probably said, okay, we know the ratings aren't what they used to be during the Attitude Era, but they're getting remarkably low, so you need to do something about this. So they came out to address it. Now, a couple things. The first thing they said is they haven't been listening to the fans. They took the blame first. Baron Corbin is a representation of the old way of booking.
Okay.
So they buried the old way of booking. Baron Corbin happened to be playing that character right then, but they weren't saying it was Baron Corbin's fault. It was just, he was representation. He was representing the old way of booking. That is why they had that big blow-off where all these wrestlers that are generally popular destroyed the old way of booking.
Okay, I can see that. I like your viewpoint there. I dig that. So, should we expect like a superstar shakeup, or are we just going to get a change in how the booking has been going on?
And this is what I was explaining, which I've gotten a discussion. This is not WCW. They're not going to come out and say, "Hey, we're taking all the title belts away, and we're starting over." WWE is a billion-dollar company, so every change you see, it's going to be significant. But it's still going to play kind of inside the WWE's lines of coloring book. That's what I'm like. It's like WWE gives you a coloring book, and it has the outside the lines, and they want you to color inside the lines, but you kind of get to pick the colors. And what they're saying is the people that we presented on top and given most of the time aren't the people that you want. So we're going to give you different people.
Okay. Speaking of that, the next thing I wanted to talk about was they listed 1, 2, 3, 4 people, and six people, 4 people and a tag team that are going to be coming up from NXT. We got Lars Sullivan, Lacey Evans, EC3, Nikki Cross, and the tag team Heavy Machinery, which I absolutely love those guys. They crack me up.
Stakes and weights.
Yes, stakes and weights. Stakes and weights. I think that's so funny. What do you think about these people coming up? Are there going to be more than just these? Should we see any surprises? And then I'm going to ask you, which individually, which place do you think they should go, Raw or SmackDown?
All right. First of all, I'm going to say, I think this is it until after the Rumble.
After the Rumble? Okay.
I think at the Rumble, you'll get your debuts at the Rumble like they usually do.
Gotcha.
And I truly think a lot of these people were about to get sent up, and they just fast-forwarded it ahead. So, I'm excited. I mean, Heavy Machinery is what Heavy Machinery is. So, they will have that initial almost No Way Jose. They'll win, and then they'll lose the titles, and they might go away after that. But they're going to have to pretty much, I wouldn't call it be part of a stable, but they're going to have to be an associated act, because I think the Heavy Machinery act would get stale really quick.
Oh, okay. Do you see Lars Sullivan going to Raw or SmackDown?
SmackDown. I think they want him. He want him to be the big guy in a group of small people.
I got you. So, with Baron Corbin, with Braun Strowman being on Raw, it seems, I would agree with you. Don't you think it seems more logical that he would be needed on SmackDown, like you just said?
Yes.
What about Lacey Evans? You see her going to Raw or SmackDown?
I'm going to go SmackDown because they kind of have the thinner women's division, but I can't think of anybody immediately she'd feud with. So I think there's more faces on Raw. So I'm going to go with Raw.
Okay.
Because she can feud with Ember Moon.
Do you like Lacey Evans? Because I absolutely love her gimmick, dude.
Does it do anything for me? I dig her. I dig her story. And I wish they would play up the more human side of her more than anything.
I got you.
But I like that her gimmick is different. And you know that about me. Even if I might not like your gimmick, or I might not like the result, if it's different, I'm going to be for it.
And right.
She's not like any other woman. And with her being a tall blonde, she'd be easily to get confused with Charlotte. But her gimmick is so different that she sticks out on her own.
I got you. That makes sense. I dig it. EC3, Raw or SmackDown?
I'm going to go Raw.
I think so.
Looks like a Vince guy.
I totally agree with that, dude. 100%. Heavy Machinery?
Heavy Machinery? I think they're going to be a lot of vignettes and a lot of backstage stuff and them having fun. That's why I'm putting them on Raw.
Yeah, because they have that whole other hour to fill.
Yeah, they have a whole other hour to fill. I think SmackDown would probably be best because they have more veteran tag teams that could make them look good. But I think it's going to be Raw.
I dig it. What about Nikki Cross?
Oh, SmackDown. Shoot, Sanity. Reunited.
I didn't even think about that. Do you think that... you think she'll be back in Sanity full-time?
If they're saying, I'm going to hold them at their word that they're giving fans what they want. Fans freaking love Sanity.
Right.
And Sanity, even when they called Sanity up and they didn't call her up, there was a lot of bitching and moaning about that because Sanity isn't Sanity without Nikki Cross. She was kind of, when they announced Sanity, she was kind of the first member.
Right.
So, yeah.
I dig it. Next question I got. And that is, I've seen Sami Zayn vignettes where he's supposed to be coming back real soon. Do we have any idea if he's going to Raw or SmackDown? And part two of that is, where's KO? When's KO coming back?
His vignette came on too. They did. His was the very last vignette of the show.
Oh, right, Kevin Owens was?
Yeah, right before the main event.
And that was on Raw or SmackDown?
That was on Raw.
Oh, okay. So are they both going to Raw or are they getting split up?
They're both coming back, but I think this is where you're going to get to shake things up. I think one might go to Raw and one might not go to SmackDown. I don't think they're going to necessarily be together.
Okay, I dig it. I absolutely dig it. And here is one that you might want to talk about a little bit. The Revival actually got a win, and that means they're going to get a title shot. Are you happy to see The Revival finally getting some... like some light shined on them, and do you think they're going to get a title run?
The happiest thing was they said they abolished Lucha House Party rules.
Oh, yes. I should have put that down on the list because I knew you would like that.
Because, yeah, it was the most confusing thing ever to me. And believe me, I suspend my disbelief a lot for wrestling. I could not on that one. I'm like, how's the guys that are up 3-2? How are they the good guys?
Right.
I don't know how this is breaking everything in wrestling ever. So yeah. So I'm glad that's gone. Second of all, it looks like they're about to have actual tag team wrestling because you got Bobby Roode and Gable, and now you got the Revival, and this is the number one contenders. They hit their move. I think Bobby Roode's been a tag team specialist most of his career. He was part of Beer Money. He was part of the Dirty Heels with Austin Aries. Now he's with Gable. So he's a very accomplished tag team wrestler. And now you got the Revival. And the Revival, and when there was the American team with Gable and Jordan. American Alpha. They put on some 5-star matches. So I'm thinking they can do something similar with Bobby Roode and Gable.
I get it. Is there any word on Jason Jordan, speaking of American Alpha?
There is. He is right now. He has not cleared to wrestle, and they're looking at him more as an ambassador backstage role.
Really? So they don't know if he's ever going to be cleared again?
Correct.
Wow. And that was a neck injury, right?
Correct.
Man, that's so horrible for him, man. He's been, you know, like, that tag team was absolutely phenomenal. You know, a lot of us complained and bitched and moaned about the Kurt Angle being his dad shtick they had going on, angle they had going on. But as far as in-ring work, I mean, I love Jason Jordan, you know?
Yeah, I am a big fan of Jason Jordan. Crazy thing is he ended up playing Kurt Angle's son and then having the same neck injury.
Oh, I didn't even put that together. Yeah, that makes sense because, you know, Kurt Angle is, you know, the first injury he ever had was a neck injury, and it's bothering him his whole career, you know? Injury,
yeah.
Man, that's sad. It really is sad. So, you remember a few months ago, they started off the show with a gauntlet match, and I think it was when everyone kind of got back on the Seth Rollins boat. Everybody was like, yeah, this is what Seth Rollins does. You know, he was in the ring like 45 minutes to an hour. He didn't win the match, but I think he started it and went through the first three opponents, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And everyone spoke so highly of that, and since then we've seen two or three gauntlet matches, including one that ended Raw the other night. And that was, we had Bayley, Alicia Fox, Dana Brooke, Mickey James, Ember Moon, and Natalya. Natalya ended up being the winner. Do you think that, or do you like these gauntlet matches, and do you think they're getting less and less over the more and more that we have?
I like the gauntlet matches that have a specific point to get someone over. When Seth Rollins went an hour, that match was made to get him over. And I liked it because it served a purpose. This gauntlet match was kind of boring.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Yeah, and if it was me, I would have taken that opportunity to remind the people that Sasha Banks could still wrestle. I would have had her, because she doesn't, work. So I would have had Sasha Banks go in at one and then work her way all the way through. Natalya come out at six and take advantage of a tired Sasha. That way Sasha gets over, because the only reason she lost was she was tired, and you still get the Natalya win.
I dig it. I like it.
But yeah, I thought Sasha Banks needed to win this. I thought, when you talk about someone that has been pushed to the back burner, that fans love, she could literally be the Beyonce of the WWE if you wanted her to be.
Yeah.
And all she would have to do is start winning.
Do you think that she works better as a face or a heel?
Oh, heel. Heel.
Yeah, me too,
heel.
Man, dude.
Yes, and she's one of the few people that if she starts working as a heel, it doesn't affect her merchandise sales.
Does it? Yeah, I bet she still sells a
because she's
of stuff.
A boss, and she's kind of bitchy, and like I said, she's kind of Beyonce, so people expect her not to be nice, and they still want to wear her stuff.
Right. Yeah, man, when I go back and I watch some of the NXT stuff before the Women's Revolution, and you see some of the Bayley versus Sasha Banks stuff when Sasha was a heel, and like, she would come out and escalate, and then the guys would carry her to the ring and lift her up and stuff like that. Dude, that was the best Sasha Banks ever. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think she was, and right now I'm going to say Becky at this point in time, but Sasha Banks, the boss, NXT boss, was the best female character I've seen in wrestling. It was, to me, the best representation of a woman with an attitude that, woman with the attitude that just thought she was the best and, wasn't catty or anything like that. The reason she had swag, the reason she had attitude is because she was the best wrestler.
I agree. I absolutely agree, dude. It was awesome. It was awesome. We got a few topics to talk about here. From SmackDown before I let you go, my man. One of them being, so Vince kind of took over SmackDown as well. And the first thing was right off the bat, we started off with Becky, Charlotte, Asuka, and Naomi. Vince comes out, he tells them to stop complaining, to fix the problem yourself, and blah, 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 blah. I thought that Becky, Charlotte, Asuka, and Naomi could have handled that just fine without Vince. Did we need Vince right there, or was it just, do you think he was actually needed there, or was it just them trying to get a cheap ratings?
That was a pop.
Yeah. I think so.
Get on Twitter, say Vince is coming out, and try to get some friends to turn it on there.
I completely agree, dude. I completely agree. Next, we had the Good Brothers versus the Usos. Where the hell have the Good Brothers been? They even referenced it on SmackDown. This was the first time they were on SmackDown since August. Have they just been running the house show loop or what?
Yeah, they've just been running the house show loop. They are perfectly healthy.
So there was no injuries? That was going to be my next question. No injuries, nothing?
Nope.
Jeez, man. That's do you think, I mean, they're probably making great money, so they might not care, but at the same time, some wrestlers take a lot of pride in their creative. Do you think the Good Brothers regret leaving New Japan to come and do this?
No, because from what I understand, because of AJ and AJ made them a package deal, they got like way more money than they probably should have.
See, and that's a whole nother reason that they should be getting used, don't you think? Like, it's just a waste of money if they're just working the house show loop, to me. You know what I mean?
I understand. You bring them two and AJ, them two and Finn, and you don't do some kind of club taking over invasion type thing, it was a waste of money.
I agree. Can you imagine the Bullet Club coming in like that?
Yeah, and it's just like when you look at the Elite, they looking over at You know they're looking over at the club and they're like, they brought them in and did nothing with them. And you know that's what Cody and all of them think. They think every move got through. It's like, they're not going to bring us in as the elite and have us try to come over WWE. They're going to split us all up, put us in mid-card roles, and wait, hope people forget about us.
Yep. I totally agree. Totally agree. Last thing I want to talk about. AJ Styles and Mustafa Ali took on Daniel Bryan and Andre Cien Almas, and Mustafa Ali pinned the champion. What was your thoughts on this, man?
First of all, I want to congratulate Mustafa Ali. He is the first person from 205 Live to graduate to the main roster of the a show. I mean, I guess you could say Lucha House Party, but I felt like they were a Band-Aid. I never thought they were going to be there permanently.
Right.
But Mustafa Ali is the first singles wrestler to be on there. Very happy. I'm a big fan of 205 Live. I think I may have missed one or two episodes ever. Mm-hmm. So I am a big fan of the show, and I'm a big fan of what he can do. I hope they let him do some of his promo work that he does on Twitter and Instagram on the show, because I think that's his best work.
Gotcha.
But yes, this was a shocker, and it was like he had so much momentum from last week, and he hits Daniel Bryan with the 054. He actually botches it a little bit and catches him in the face with the knee. When he gets on, he immediately says, "I'm sorry." So many people caught that audio.
Yeah.
But Daniel Bryan did the business for him, and they might have built him a new star in Mustafa Ali.
I agree, man. Yeah, I did see that all over Twitter where he said, "I'm sorry, Bryan." Or I'm sorry, Daniel, whatever he said.
You know, and Daniel Bryan was like, "I don't care."
Yeah, I figured Daniel Bryan has had such a huge career, and he wrestles, or he used to wrestle, a very, very physical style, that he knows that mistakes like that are going to happen. And when you're doing something, when you're wrestling at that caliber, even at that caliber, you can't be perfect. So I don't think, I highly doubt Daniel Bryan had any problems with it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's a professional. He's worked the indie scene. He's worked the different levels. Mustafa Ali, I've seen him do that move quite a bit, and I've never seen that happen.
Yep, I totally agree. Totally agree.
So that was a one-time occurrence. Probably excited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I totally agree. That's all that I wanted to talk about today. I know our show is a little bit shorter than usual, but my son's out of school today, so I'm spending the day with him. I have training in Tulsa tonight at the academy, and then tomorrow I'm hoping that you and I can get together and kind of do our review on WWE TLC. But for now, I'd like you to tell everybody where you spend your weekends at, my man.
All right. Before I tell everybody that, make sure you watch Johnny Gargano and Aleister Black on NXT in a steel cage match. It was a really good match. I think it was really enjoyable. I like to let everyone to know what they think. But as usual, I am on my favorite website, the website that carries me, thechairshot.com.
Just to let
you know, they are posted that they are looking for new podcasts and writers. So if you're interested in getting into that, go ahead and hit up thechairshot.com. But I'm on this little show called Around the Ring. Comes out Sunday before noon. We cover wrestling topics through the week. We jump around a little bit. It's me and my friend Ryan. You can hit us up on Facebook, Around the Ring OK, or Twitter, at Around the Ring OK. And just let us know what you think. And if you want to ask us a question, it's aroundtheringok@gmail.com.
Absolutely, man. Love Around the Ring. Love y'all's show. Love Ryan. Love thechairshot.com. Everyone that's listening, we thank y'all very much. Floyd, as always, I learn something new from you every day, so I truly appreciate it. Everyone listening, I hope you follow us on all our social media between Floyd and myself. And that's all for today. So for Floyd and myself, we hope everyone stays strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. Ha, 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 ha. But
but I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do